Hello again and welcome to Tech Plus. This week's show, as always, loaded with only the best and latest tech news that you need to know. And we share it with you the whole week's biggest stories in 60 minutes, along with some good music, of course. And my name's Ion, with you for the next 60 minutes, along with Kane. Hello, Kane. How's it going?
It's going very well, thank you. Yeah. How's your week?
No, it was quick, actually, hey?
Flies by.
Yeah, it was really a quick one. And yours?
Great. I mean, other than, we always, you see, when there's no load shedding, we start the show and we're like, it's great. And then it comes.
Yeah. Last week, we probably jinxed it. Because we were saying, oh man, it's going much better. And now we only affect it once a day for 2 hours, sometimes not even once. And now, stage six the whole weekend. I was wondering, you know, and the funny thing is, our electricity minister, he was bragging just a couple of days ago. He was bragging and saying, no, you know, it's going well and everything's improving and demand is much lower than we expected now in winter, especially with the cold fronts all over. And he said those words and 2 days or so later, like, bam, stage six is back, eh? It just breaks that trust, eh? When he said that, I was kind of like, I was still hoping, you know? Wow, it's actually improving. I believe this man. And then a couple of days later, bam, there it goes again.
Because everyone's like, oh, so I can use my heater. Fantastic.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, the cold front will have, you know, it's a terrible cold snap in our country at the moment. And of course, it's going to have an impact on our electricity use because we switch on heaters and stuff. You can only do so much with blankets.
Yeah, no, this is one of the coldest, I think, back-to-back. Maybe even next weekend as well. It's cold.
I can't remember. You know, it's hard to recall last winter. You know, they always say, no, it's worse. It's getting colder and colder and colder. But last winter was cold, but I don't know if it was this cold. Like, my skeleton's aching.
You move slower.
Yeah. And, like, you get home and your bed just feels like it's wet. But it's just really cold. It's insane. But, I mean, that's probably when you live so close to the lagoon as well. Hey.
Yeah, no, when if you live close to the water's edge and you step outside and there's a nice breeze from the shore onto you, you're going to feel cold.
Yeah.
Very cold.
That's
even
the downside.
In the morning as well. But hey, I mean, you got to enjoy winter while it's here. You know, it's quick to be like, yeah, no, you know, it's frozen, it's cold. Just you wait. When summer comes, it's going to be very hot.
Yeah, well, at least you have someone to keep you warm, Kane.
You got to
sucks for the
warm.
Single people. Jeez.
No, that is too funny. Now, have you heard anything more about Threads?
I only know that they had another milestone that they surpassed this week. And then I also know that Twitter had some hectic technical problems on Wednesday, I think.
Oh, really?
Wow. And the timing is really bad because, of, you know.
No, Twitter has problems and then Threads. So for anyone who doesn't know, Threads is Meta's clone, essentially, of Twitter in a way that they're not saying it's a clone. But really, it's to be Twitter, but on Meta and with Facebook. If you go to Threads, if you have a Facebook account, basically, or an Instagram account, you can automatically transition that account to a Threads account, and basically it operates like Twitter. And last week, you know, they blew the top of the ceiling off kind of with how many users they were picking up, you know, over 50 million in just a very short period of time. Hundreds of millions of posts are out now. And it's not really a good metric because the way Facebook and Twitter and everyone would have started would have been from ground zero, whereas everyone has kind of been pushed from Facebook and Instagram over to Threads, which in of itself is an incredibly good strategy. But I must say, compared to when it launched and all the news, it was kind of everywhere. Now, I almost forgot Threads existed.
You see, that's always the thing. It's always this huge story, you know? And then you can't keep it going like that. I mean, it just falls flat after a week or so. Because people checked it out. They were curious. Now they know what it's all about. It's not very exciting, let's be honest.
No.
It's quite boring. And that's it now, you know?
I know. And for me, I mean, even Elon is, you know, talking about how Twitter's all-time usage is about to break another record and all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, when we saw Trump Social, which was like the competitor to Facebook,
I forgot about it.
And now we see this Threads as well. I don't know if the answer to building a big social media platform that's going to last a long time and really be the go-to, like people will leave other platforms to go to this platform. I don't think it's going to be a clone of another one. I mean, you know, are you, the end user just can't be expected to post every single one of them to maintain a virtual identity, you know, especially the younger generations. When I was growing up, you know, you needed to have like a Facebook account and an Instagram account to kind of socialize digitally, you mm-hmm. know, and you would check out the new stuff and you would try to get involved in it. But when there's like so much different things all offering the exact same thing, you can't expect me to take a picture of my morning breakfast and then post it on 10, 15 different platforms.
Exactly.
Unless you're a company and then you manage it. But even from the company point of view, you know, being from a marketing background, the more social media platforms they are that they're popular, the more platforms a business needs to be on to connect with the right number of people, meaning the broader your focus needs to be on multiple channels instead of one hyper-focused channel, unless you choose to do so. But there's always more there that you're not catering to, that that, you know, if you're having trouble connecting with audiences and your goal is to start doing all platforms to try and reach these right people, it's a hell of a lot of work to take on to find the one or two that are going to work, and then the people that have picked one or two but they're not working might never make the transition to others. It just sounds like it's getting challenging to keep your business online on every vertical.
It is, it is. No, I've seen it firsthand, eh? It's hectic.
But Elon Musk's not just, you know, Twitter done. He's just Elon Musk's new XAI company launches to, quote unquote, understand the true nature of the universe. The XAI or the XAI team will hold a Twitter Spaces chat, and that will be held on that was held on the 14th of July. And Elon Musk's newly formed AI company has revealed itself with a new website detailing its mission at team@x.ai. Musk tweeted the company's intent is to understand reality without any other details or explanation. Musk's quite strange because he talks about the dangers of AI. You know, talks about how he created his own worst enemy by being one of the initial funders in some of the most advanced AI today. And goes and makes his own AI again, makes another AI company. It's hard to follow. It's hard to exactly follow what his game plan is, but I like the idea of trying to use AI to understand the universe. I mean, who knows? It would definitely be something worth pushing all that processing power towards. Who knows? Maybe you find something out. But it's hard with Elon. You don't know if it's a joke or it's serious.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, if you reach out to Twitter press, you get a poop emoji back. It's still exactly like this to this day. If you go read publications and articles about something happening and them, you know, reaching out to Twitter, they'll always include that they reached out to Twitter and they responded with a poop emoji, because it's just what
Why?
It's just crazy.
But I mean, do you think he was also joking about suing Threads or Meta?
I think he was angry. I do think he was very serious when he said it. You know what happens? You sue them to remove Threads, and then they pivot it to a slightly different platform with the same user base, and you know, it's very challenging.
Because, I mean, if he wanted to sue, it would have been this week, because we spoke about it last week. He did nothing or said nothing this week.
Yeah.
So, is he still thinking of doing it?
He might, and he might still, I mean, be building a case, you know.
Ah, good point.
He might be working rigorously with, I mean, he's not working hard on a case because he's released a new AI company, so he doesn't seem very fazed by it, to be honest.
Do you think it's a good idea for somebody to be involved in so many projects? Because in the end, you know, I mean, you can only really focus and give 100% on just one thing, you know.
I think it is a good idea.
Do you think divided focus, is that a good thing? Because they all deserve 100% of you, but you can't give 100% to all of your stuff.
Yeah.
Do you do?
Well, I think when you're working on such big projects, you're only as fast as your slowest moving person.
Yeah,
you know, of course, most of the time, your company will only grow as fast as the slowest people can move. Mm. And if you're someone who's adapt to moving very quickly, you're only going to be able to apply an hour or an hour and a half a day to that area before significant movement has happened, that you can actually come back from such a macro position and keep pushing that, you know, that engine. So for someone like Elon, when you're talking about SpaceX, you're talking about Neuralink, you're talking about Tesla, you're talking about this new AI company, talking about Twitter, you know, you have all these different companies. They're all big companies that with momentum move forward. They're not racing anywhere. They are racing in their own right, but I think it's very much manageable for him because everyone knows what they're doing. But he's definitely pushing the envelope of what is normal.
Yeah, he loves doing that.
And you can even, like, for example, I always think about Jeff Bezos. He once had an interview and he said the majority of his day consists of between 8 to 12 very important calls. He must make 8 to 12 very important decisions every day. And he'll start his day at whatever, 10 a.m., and he'll finish his day early, but he will make sure that he solves those 10 or 12 issues properly. And that's not taking him hours and hours. He's not, you know, hunched over a desk rushing to get everything done. He's just making the big decisions right then and there, and based on that decision, everyone in the company activates.
So it's, I think, nice it when is you possible. Have a good team behind you. That's so important.
I think when you're in that position, you're actually only as good as your team. You're not actually, without your team as a, you're not there. No, you know, when you're getting to that level, without, and in any scenario, you know, any CEO is actually not, any founder, co-founder, boardroom is actually nothing without the hands moving.
Exactly.
Moving the wheel. So we've got to pay respect to those.
Those amen, brother. That's so true.
Next, you know, after the break, I've got some really interesting stuff to talk about. But what do you want to do now? Do you have something for us?
Yeah, I got some music for us, man.
Hey.
You know, there's this new tune that's going around. It's a new edit of a song that was released, I think it was the 80s, or it could be the early 90s. But anyway, it was released by an artist called Sade. It's called Smooth Operator. We all know the song. It's like a jazzy, slow song.
Yeah.
But there's this new guy who remixed it. And now this remix is going around on TikTok. It's used in every second video, basically.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to listen to right now. That TikTok remix of Sade's Smooth Operator.
Let's hit it.
Love.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. If you just joined us, you're very welcome. It's Ion with you and also Caden. Caden, what have you got for us next?
I suppose we got to start with the AI. Because AI, there is just so much action on AI. I can't escape the news about AI. Every left, right, and center. I think one of the biggest AI news pieces that actually has nothing to do with AI, but is caused because of AI, is a real photo was rejected from a local competition of AI suspicious kind of setup that doesn't look right. So a real photograph was rejected from a competition over suspicions it was AI generated. They went on to say that we can't know for sure if it is or isn't, but on the basis we're suspicious, we can't allow it in, which was the owner of Caring Cross Photos, who runs the competition. So I mean, I'll show you the photo. Okay, when you look at the photo, right, you see the photo.
Mm.
It literally is just kind of three people kind of sitting in a bathroom well dressed.
And then there's a mirror.
And there's a mirror in the background. And after, you know, I've worked with a lot of AI images, and there is really reason to be suspicious of this image. It's on the one percentile scale. You know, normally there's quite a lot of details that you would be able to pick on that would at least make you 20% suspicious to say this is definitely AI. But you know, when you look at certain images, certain things just sometimes don't quite work. But in this particular image, I can tell you that it is more likely to be real than fake.
Do you think it's because it looks too perfect? The color is beautiful.
I think what's causing the, and you got to look at the, you know, for the viewers, it's a little bit difficult, but it's kind of like a very bright and vibrant photo. People are dressed in a, you know, one person's dressed in normal clothing and the other two people are in kind of funkier clothing, a little bit different, a little bit more creative. And I think the contrast of each character in this scene makes you feel like the characters aren't really connected. And maybe, because the characters aren't connected, maybe the scene isn't connected.
Maybe it's like just a good filter or some good Photoshop skills. Were you allowed to use those?
Yeah, well, you could have done some editing. And
but they say AI. You see, but once again now, that problem pops up that I've been mentioning every single week is how hard it is to distinguish between what's real and what's not.
It is very difficult.
Teachers, probably, when you give a teacher something now in 2023, they'll never know if it's yours.
No, they'll never know. Do you want to hear an alarming statistic?
Yeah.
30% of the code on GitHub. GitHub is basically Microsoft's code repository for open source software, or even just private software that is shared between individuals and worked on collaboratively. It forms quite a large chunk of the active software that a lot of users will use every single day. A lot of open source software. I think even OBS is on GitHub, yeah, which is open broadcast software, which is basically what's used by most streamers, Twitch streamer, any kind of streamer, even like some big streams. You know, if you're watching Cyril Ramaphosa give a speech, they're probably using open broadcast software.
Cool.
And you know, that is part of GitHub as well. And 30% of the code on GitHub is AI generated right now.
Whoa.
30% of it, which means I find that an alarming stat, because you know, if you said 30% of the images online were AI generated, I'd be like, it makes kind of sense, because you can generate a lot faster than you can create. So eventually there will be more AI images online than there is normal images, because an AI image can be made in 30 seconds. Whereas one designer might take a week or 2 weeks or 120 hours to finish a design,
yeah,
you know. But there's, you know, there's a, it's AI is crazy, eh? And it's very difficult to disseminate between what's real and what isn't real. And let's run an example. Let's say Drake goes to Drake AI, which is an AI that can sing a song in Drake's voice, and you can give it lyrics. And there's other AI that can write songs that Drake would likely write. So you got AI Drake writers and AI Drake singers, and Drake can then have the Weeknd AI come on, and he can have, you know, any artist he wants be AI generated on top of his track with some degree of lyrics, and he can have 20 different tracks, and he can say, you know, this one track of this 20, this is a real banger. I could see this being a real banger. Let's make it. And then he produces it and releases it. You will never in a million years know it started with AI. You would never know it. And it's in the same way that the GitHub statistics are so crazy, because it is in creating functional technologies and software that AI is there. So it's not there because we made so much information and put it there. It's there because people chose to build with it. And it's infiltrated that 30 percentile, which is insane. And then you look at something like the writer strikes, where in fairness, you know, the writers don't get paid much. I saw, you know, a game that was grossing millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and their voiceover artist for the main character in the game got paid $4,000 flat.
Wow.
That was what they made. And sure, it takes them 1.5 days to come into studio and record every audio piece there is. So $4,000 or 100,000 rand for a day and a half's work is not too bad.
Mm.
But in retrospect, when that game sells 100 million copies at $30 a copy...
Yeah, there should be some kind of royalties that you get for, like, every year, you know, because your voice is on.
Yeah, so that's a voiceover artist, but also traditional writers as well. You know, it stems even from things like the streaming platforms, Netflix and Disney Plus, Showmax. They all run the same. The way that they run is they don't share viewer stats. So the people who make the movies don't know who watches the movie or how many people have watched it. They don't share that information because it's their next purchase agreement leverage. If you don't know how popular it is, I don't have to cater to you saying it's popular, therefore I should pay more for it. So Tony Gilroy, who's the creator of Andor, or the producer of Andor, director and producer of Andor, which is a film on Disney based off of Star Wars. So it's quite a big, I mean, it's Star Wars, it's LucasArts, it's huge. And he said, Tony Leroy says he doesn't have any idea what Andor's audience is. And that's basically all thanks to the streaming services like Disney Plus keeping their viewership data under wraps. The Andor showrunner tells the rap. It's also one of the reasons why Hollywood writers are on strike, is because they don't understand viewership stats. So when they're writing for the next Stranger Things, they don't actually know that it's very popular. Social media, the virality of it could lead you to believe that Stranger Things is very popular. There you can see it,
yeah.
But what about everything that's not Stranger Things, that's smaller?
Why don't they disclose that information?
Well, I had the privilege of working with Seth Shapiro, who was making a project called Alpha Networks, which was basically building like a Netflix competitor. And in building that Netflix competitor, what they wanted to do was they wanted to be able to share viewership stats, and they wanted to have mechanisms in place that could allow ads to run and users could pay off subscriptions with ads and stuff. But the whole money making process comes from acquiring content for the lowest price possible and renewing that content for the lowest price possible for every reoccurring instance of that content, so series, episodes, or seasons after another, and make the absolute most revenue from it. And because they're such a monopoly, they have a lot of leverage to negotiate lower prices, and then as a result, the producers have to pay people less. But it's for the writers, it's especially bad because the streaming service messes with the people who produce it. The people who produce it have less money, so they mess with the writers. And the writer sits in a very troubled situation. But what can the writers do? They can strike. But mm-hmm. What does striking do? If every good writer in the Stranger Things boardroom and in the next Star Wars film and the next Marvel movie decide they're not working, the Marvel, Star Wars, Disney, they all still have to make the content. They've got deadlines. So what you're actually doing is you're forcing them to look into other ways to get the content done. And the only other way to get the content done, if humans won't write it, is AI.
Yeah.
So it's quite an alarming catch-22.
So you're saying we could see some movies written by AI in the future.
There's a show on Netflix now. The whole intro is AI.
Really?
And it's a very popular show. I'll get the name for you next week. There's a lot of toss and buss about it, but at the end of the day, people are still watching it.
Netflix now, hey?
Mm.
Did you hear, like, you know, this whole password thing that's been going on with Netflix, you know, about sharing your password and stuff? So I think a lot of people, you know, let's say you had a shared account, but now you have to open your own. A lot of, because somebody, maybe you're watching somewhere else, but anyway, somebody, you know, would have been nice if you had your profile and your watch history and all that kind of stuff. If you could take just your profile and move it to a new account, and that's what they're allowing now. So instead of your profile being deleted when you no longer allow to share that account with that person, or maybe it's your girlfriend and you break up, now you're no longer on the same account, but now you can take your profile and move it to a new account. So then your profile will remember your watch history, your likes, what you don't like, all that kind of stuff, all your favorites. That's pretty cool, because otherwise you have to start from scratch. And I mean, Netflix later on kind of knows what you like, you know, but now you got to start from scratch. So you can take your profile with you now.
I think that's pretty cool. I actually saw that news, and The Verge said something so funny in the article they wrote about it. They were like, now you can move your account from your ex's profile to your new partner's profile.
Exactly, and people will do that. That's exactly what they're going to do.
It's so funny. But you know why they're doing it? Because they can't tell you now, we're going to not let you share your password, but by the way, you must create a new account. Because before, there was still a possibility, but you had to create a new account. And when you created that new account, then you could transfer the account. Now I think you can just seamlessly transfer the account. So that does come quite in handy. But I do hope Netflix and Disney and them actually release viewership stats. It's crazy. It's like telling YouTubers you're not allowed to see your views. We're just going to pay you a random amount every month for how much ads you have people click on.
I always wonder when people don't share that information. Obviously the first thing that pops into my mind is, are they hiding something?
Yeah.
What if the show is underperforming?
Well, they're not going to overpay for it. So
yeah.
Whatever offer Netflix comes to you for, just know they aim of the game is to make a boatload of money. And I think in some situations, I definitely think they get the short straw, especially on renewal stuff. Like a movie comes out and then its sequel comes out and then its other sequel comes out, or a season comes out, then its next season. You just got to wonder, like, these shows that we are waiting for, like I remember like Altered Carbon and some really big production shows on Netflix, you just don't know. And I think when they buy the rights to it, it becomes a Netflix original. So
yeah, that's true.
So it's very hard to know for sure that, you know, that kind of information is available. But it's really crazy to think that the producer of Andor, a Star Wars film, has no clue who's watching it, where they're watching it from, how old are the people who watch it, what did the people who watch it also watch. He's got no idea who's watching his film. As the person making the film, not knowing who's watching your film is difficult.
Yeah.
To not know by the data, you know.
Yeah. Very, who are you catering for? I mean, you can have a target market and, you know, kind of plan around it and say, okay, I'm targeting people 18 to 21.
Yeah.
But you don't know if those are actually the ones watching in the end.
Exactly. So clearing through the AI news. Now, you know, we're talking about AI. It's getting quite popular. It's getting quite difficult to discern things from things. But most, like some of the AI models, like Firefly, Adobe has an AI model that makes images and stuff like that, helps you in your design process, like a little AI assistant that can do some stuff. But it was only in English. And now they've launched into over 100 different languages, which is crazy, which means 100 other languages are going to be able to communicate with Adobe's AI model, which is a lot of people and a lot more interest and a lot more activity. So that's definitely something to look for. Google's now getting sued for their AI. So Google has been sued over how it trains its AI products by scraping the web. According to CNN, the complaint alleges that Google, quote unquote, has been secretly stealing everything ever created and shared on the internet by hundreds of millions of Americans and using this data to train its AI products, such as its chatbot Bard. The complaint also claims that Google has taken virtually the entirety of our digital footprint, including creative and copywritten works, to build its AI products. So, wow. That's crazy. So Google recently updated its privacy policy to say that it uses publicly available information from the web to train its AI products. It is a wild, wild west.
But humans let those robots loose, eh?
I mean, they're humans. Yeah, and it was built by not 100 million humans, just a couple of them in a room. I mean, I think Midjourney was started by five people, I think. five people are now responsible for the production of probably 100,000 assets an hour. It's insane. It's absolutely crazy. But as I said, you know, the AI news is just inescapably everywhere. Google's about AI. Bing, Microsoft Bing is AI happening. You know, Midjourney, Firefly from Adobe also kicking in.
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Will AI steal my job? In general, not just radio. In general.
Look, I've heard a lot of theories about where it'll go. It is sort of an Internet of Things thing. There are a lot of businesses, like physical businesses, that have been heavily impacted by the internet that we don't really talk about. You know, malls in America are quite, there's malls that are, that have like 30% occupancy of
even
shops.
Even in our country.
Even in our country as well. No one
empty
talks,
malls.
No one talks yeah. about that waste. I mean, look at Blockbuster. Gone. The internet has destroyed many, that's many true. Jobs and many, many commercial retail industries
and
as well.
Musica.
And yeah, Musica gone.
Oh man, I can't believe it.
Remember like BT Games was like a, oh, I man. Remember that one. Yeah, they, you know, they, and Stir Kinnicore was really struggling for a bit. I mean, you go to Stir Kinnicore now, honestly, it feels a fifth of what it used to be. It's like you get this pre-packed little, you can have this sweet or that sweet, you can have this popcorn, and you can choose from three flavors, and that's it.
Why did they take the fun out of it?
Yeah, you got to buy your snacks before you arrive, and
to save the queues, I suppose.
To save the queues, but
also the prices, man, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the popcorn we had there wasn't great. So I mean, these industries are being massively affected. So when someone says, you know, do I think AI will take my job, I think it will challenge it. I think you can challenge it back, because I read a very interesting article that had a good angle on it. They said that a very real reality might be where every single person has their own personal AI assistant that can speak like them, talk for them.
Oh, I'd love to
work
it's like
on
a
their
personal
behalf,
assistant, yeah.
You know, do things like order groceries and make sure that all the, you know, or everything's running properly, and check your computer to make sure no issues are there, and it can just run as a virtual assistant and just do a bunch of stuff, but it's trained on you. So now we're looking at a problem that's happening with Google, which is we can make extremely strong AI if we give it human work. The problem with giving it human work is that it's human work, and there's no way to pay that individual, because we don't understand how AI makes the images. That's another crazy thing. We don't know how it works. We know we put a request in and we get something out. We don't know what happens in the middle. We've built it so that it does just that. You know, we learn to do things backwards with AI. I'll give you an example. There's a project that was looking at changing the blur of an image. So if I take a photo of you and I've got the focus on your face, and there's a landscape shot behind you, what's behind you will most likely be blurred if that's how I've chosen to take my photo. Okay, but the background is physically blurred. I can't go unblur it later. It's blurred, but your face is clear, right? Then I take the same photo again, except I focus on the mountain. So now the mountain or the landscape behind you is clear and your face is blurred. Now I teach AI what a foreground blur and a background blur looks like. And if I train it enough, I can give it an image that I've taken of a landscape shot where your face is in focus and the scene behind is blurred, and I can tell it to unblur the scene, and it will use what I've taught it to unblur the scene. But for us to actually take a photo and 1 month later go unblur the background so that we can make it in focus again, impossible. It's so difficult. It will be really, really challenging. You will have to go out and take another photo.
Yeah.
But with AI, you remove it, and it's completely gone. It doesn't make any sense. We don't know how it happened. So you teach it something where we can perform the task, and you teach it to do it backwards, and it
that's
does it
backwards.
That's
a good analogy there, yeah.
So you're going to learn to, you'll probably have an AI assistant. I don't think it would take a job, but it will create business.
Yeah, let it make your life easier. Work with it, you know, and team up with it.
And not just an AI assistant, but it will be the Internet of Things thing. It will be the next set of job disruptors. Disruption. We might have an AI that does our taxes, and it does our emails, and it acts as a secretary, and it writes our bibliography for us, and it does all of this stuff. But if your whole day is consumed with doing those things, what happens when your day becomes more available? It's like talking to someone before 2000 about the Internet of Things in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
It's so far away, and there's a lot of people who are going to fight when things don't go right, and it's gonna be a bumpy ride. As I said, it's so much news, it's so much information, it's hard to run away from it.
And now that we're going to music, I have one more question for you. In the future, in a couple of years from now, will you be coming to the studio to present Tech Plus, or is it Kanebot? You're sending Kanebot.
I would never, for anything for anything that's like this, I would never do it, because you don't do this to get paid. You do this because you enjoy it. And why would you want to suck the enjoyment out of something you enjoy doing and replace it with something? Rather replace all the things you hate doing and spend way more time and effort doing the things you do enjoy doing.
And the AI also lacks that human empathy and all that kind of stuff.
It'll pass you in 5 years.
You won't
distinguish it. And we have to build systems and technologies and rules and regulations and approaches that work with it, not against it, because if we take it off the table, that technology exists, it's just going to be used maliciously underneath the radar. You're not going to know about it. I'd rather know every single thing about what's AI and what's not, and I'd rather be able to make money from it or lose money from it, but I know what's going on. I can trust what I see. So we build technologies to see through the AI and know what's real and what's not. That's way more important than trying to shove the industry into a box and let it run rampant in the background, and we don't have that pressure to build the regulatory framework for it, to make sure people can get paid when their work is used to train it, and to make sure that when you use it, you don't use people's work that you didn't pay for. And that's the balance that has to be found.
Thanks, Kane. Let's go for some music.
The tale old story, get with a new boy, and he comes with a stalker too, an obsessed ex-girlfriend, finding on the socials, liking an old picture too.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. We are now entering the final stretch of this week's show. Just before the break, we spoke about AI. If you missed it, our podcast is available afterwards. Kane, what's next?
So here's something really interesting. First, we'll just talk about, remember Microsoft and Activision were doing a deal. Microsoft wanted to buy Activision. Activision is a game production company that made games like Call of Duty franchise. All of the Call of Duties you've heard mainly came from Activision and Blizzard. So Microsoft wants to buy Activision. Now, the value of this purchase is $70 billion. So this is far more expensive than Twitter even. So they valuing a game company at $70 billion mainly because it has the Call of Duty franchise and Microsoft is after the Call of Duty franchise. However, in the middle of this deal trying to happen, the FTC stepped in and said, we don't think it's okay to do this deal, mainly because of the monopoly element. Microsoft is absorbing all these micro companies and absorbing them all. And if it absorbs such a big one like Activision, it's a monopoly. It makes it really difficult for other competitors and
definitely
things.
Definitely, yeah.
However, a judge ruled in favor of Microsoft in its fight with the FTC. So they basically, a judge ruled that it's okay for the purchase to continue, for Microsoft to close the deal with Activision and basically purchase Call of Duty, which is crazy because Microsoft is Xbox. Xbox and PlayStation have always been rivalries.
Yeah.
Call of Duty is a PlayStation exclusive. So the talk about what's better, an Xbox or a PlayStation, well, Xbox bought it.
Yeah.
Xbox bought a game on PlayStation, not the PlayStation.
Yeah.
PlayStation would never let that happen.
No.
They would die if it happened.
Yeah.
But it's cool to see something like that.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
These two competitors were challenging themselves, and one of them was so successful that they ended up buying one of the driving factors that made the PlayStation such a popular choice.
Yeah.
Very interesting turn
freaking
of events.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm.
So now what's happened is the FTC has appealed the deal.
Okay.
So they've appealed the decision to allow the deal to go through. So that'll go through another whole legal process. And they seem pretty bullish on not letting this deal go through. They really seem concerned about it, which is strange because it's just two companies, like one company is being bought by another company. It just happens to be those companies are insanely huge. And the FTC is like, monopoly, don't do it, like we're not happy with this. So very interesting to see what happens there. Now it's weird because we were talking about cinema and sometimes the experience feels like a little bit less than it was 5-7 years ago, but it's still a lot of fun. And the Oppenheimer movie is coming to IMAX soon, and it was so interesting because I was watching the behind the scenes of them preparing the it's called The Prints, that are on a reel that play when you go watch a movie, that it's still on a little like ribbon, you know, old-fashioned photos, kind of like that, old-fashioned video. It's still like that.
What?
It's still like that. And it's IMAX, which is even more like, what? But even more than that, it's not just one little roll. No, it's a hell of a lot of rolls. It all comes to about 230 kgs, just one Oppenheimer film. Just the one cinema IMAX film is like, they call it 530 pounds. They ship 530 pounds worth of a reel to one cinema. So if there's two or three cinemas in that cinema that's playing it, or two or three screens, they need three of them, which is 1,500 pounds worth of movie. And it comes in a rolled up.
I feel sorry
thing.
For the reel operator.
You got to swap.
It's so heavy lifting.
Yeah.
No, how do you even? You can't just, one guy can't just lift that, can you?
Because if they digitalize it, it can be copied and released online.
Okay, but what if something goes wrong? Because those reels are known for getting sucked in, or
I've had things happen like that before. Yeah,
they get sucked in, or they just, you know, break or something, and then the movie stops in the cinema.
I've seen that.
Or the thing eats it. You know, like the old tape players used to eat the tape.
Like it's stuck.
Yeah, and it just starts chewing it, and it damages it. You lose data like that. I lost a lot of recordings like that from a hungry tape player.
No.
So what would you do then? Was this very expensive reel if that had to happen?
No, I think it's crazy. I just thought we would have evolved to something that's like a super secure flash drive or something.
Yeah, because I remember when we still had the nicer movie house.
Yes.
Did you go to it?
I went there, yeah. I never
nice.
Saw how it operated in the background, though.
I did once.
Really?
Yeah, because I was the only one in the cinema.
What were you watching?
I think I went to watch Spud or something. I took myself to watch movies like once a week at least, or every second week. And, you know, it was actually, it's quite sad because it was near the time that they closed down for good, for obvious reasons.
The only guy there, yeah, there's a few problems.
So there I was in the cinema and they started the movie just for me. And I was like, yay, that's fantastic. It felt nice. I was sitting in the middle of the cinema. And like, yeah, not in the middle, but like not near the front as well. Just nice seat.
That's quite cool.
And they started the movie just for me, on time, nochal. And they dimmed the lights and everything just for me. And the popcorn and everything. And the next moment, well, deep into the movie, it just started going... and then the guy who is operating the reel, he wasn't in there. He went out. And I went into the room because I could hear where it's coming from. So I went around into the room and I saw how this real thing was slipping off the round thing and sort of eating it. And it was just chaos. And there's my movie in pieces.
That is crazy.
But anyway, he managed to stick it together and shame all the effort. He managed to stick it together and put it back on again, not in the right spot.
Well, can you imagine? I mean, you're like
and that's how I know all this.
Imagine another Star Wars movie comes out and it's in cinemas and you get this 300 kg movie box and you connect it all together. It's your first day on the job, very excited.
Oh my, oof.
And it just eats
it's
the whole
too stressful,
film.
Hey?
You're not going to just get another movie and play
exactly
it,
I'd rather work with computers.
It's like now showing the new Star Wars movie except for minute 13 to 15. We don't know where that is. Off price.
That's hilarious. But yes, it does happen, you know. And I never knew they operated old school like that. But there's something about that reel when that machine starts running, that machine, and it starts projecting it onto the canvas. It's a beautiful sound.
It's all sound and emotion and vibe.
Sound, it's just stunning.
And then the speakers turn on.
Yeah, just
great experience.
Gorgeous. And then sometimes there's like a crackle and a pop in it as well.
Well, I've got good news for you, actually. With the Oculus Quest VR headset, you can actually just put the headset on and it's literally a cinema.
I can go to the cinema again.
Yeah, and it feels
I miss the
like
cinema.
It. You know what I did? I went into the Oculus Quest, a friend of mine has it, and I put it on and I watched a YouTube video and I was watching it on a huge screen and I was like, wow, that's quite cool. And then I saw there was an option to make the screen even bigger. It felt like I had a 5-story building in front of me that was the screen. And the craziest thing was, I then realized I could change the quality of the playback on YouTube, and it was at like 1080p. I changed it to 4K.
Whoa.
I felt like you could have put 10 of me on top of each other to get to the top of the screen.
Whoa.
And it was crystal clear, and I could see up close to it, and it felt like I had my own private room there. And then you take it off, and you're like in a confined little space.
Oof.
But it's
how did your
cool.
brain respond to it, and your eyes, and did you have any headaches or nausea maybe?
Funny enough, no problems really. It's not the first time I've used it though.
Not
I've
dizziness,
used them a few really. times. But when you go into a game, when you walk around your available space, it's actually quite fun because you're walking around in three-dimensional space. But in a game, there's often a lot of running, and your playable area is not very large.
Running to a wall.
So now you got to play a balancing game between running a certain amount of space and doing the rest on the controller. And when you move like you're walking without physically walking, that's where the disconnect comes in.
And then that's horrible.
To give you an example, say you're at at Adventureland where they had those slides. Say you were on that slide in VR and you jumped into the slide. You're standing still in your playable area, but you're sliding behind the VR headset. So your brain thinks you're flying down the slide, but
your
you're standing
like,
still.
What's happening?
Yeah.
WTF.
And that's what sends... That's what trips you out properly, eh?
I can imagine. But imagine you get so into the game that you forget about the space you're in and you run through a window or something.
Well, that's
injure yourself.
No, that's where the VR headsets are really... What you do is when you put the headset on, you map out the area.
Yeah.
And no matter where you are in the game, if you reach the border of that area... Mm-hmm. it's visible. You can actually see the edge of where your playable space is.
Okay.
And funny enough, you can set your playable space. So you might not set your playable space at the edge of the wall. You might put it like half a meter away the wall. Because when you go outside of your playable space, it switches over to the VR camera.
Wow.
So when you go out of your VR space, it's like an opacity thing. It goes from fully in the game to low opacity, more towards your environment as you
see through. Okay.
And as you come back into it, it goes full opaque.
Okay, that's brilliant.
It's super cool.
Well, thank goodness they.
And you know what's even more crazy? So you put the headset on, you map out your playable area, you play in that playable area. No matter how many somersaults, backflips, twists you do, roly polies, you can move any which way you want. That headset knows exactly where in that playable area you are. You don't set up anything physical. It's just on your head. It's the only device. But if you turn it off, put it in your cupboard, leave it for a week, come back, turn it on, and carry it back into your room, that playable area is still there, and it knows exactly where you are in that playable area. It is insane.
Thank goodness they worked out that playable area. Can you imagine the injuries people would come up with?
Can you imagine the sadness of a person who puts on a VR headset and runs headfirst into a wall and breaks the VR headset? You know?
Or somebody in a multi-story building.
Just potters off the balcony.
Yeah, you know? Off the fifth floor or something, plummeting to his death because of the game, right?
Swan dives into the fridge, you know? And on that note, it's time to end, eh?
Ach ja, that's it for this week, Kane. Thank you so much as always, and best of luck to you with all the load shedding.
To you as well.
Oh, I need it. I also need to charge all my stuff.
We don't need luck, we need power.
Yeah, power to the people, but there's no power.
But thanks to all of our listeners for listening in, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Absolutely. Kane, thank you so much. Cheers. Thanks,
yeah. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Closely, you see the scars. Oh, yeah. But all the things you showed me make me feel so holy. That's what you are. And I feel it coming. You're my, my mind. Everything that we're doing feels right. Oh, I love the way that you're moving. You're my limelight. I don't wanna lose you right now. Lose you right now. Take me in your arms. Take me.
me on top of you, touch you like I do, know you'll never.